Question of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show. I hope you have had a good week. In the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing Santa Cruz resident Karen Joy Fowler, internationally best-selling and award-winning author of six novels and three short story collections. Consistently loved by critics and readers alike, her work traverses science fiction, fantasy, and literary fiction. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Karen. That's coming up in the second hour. For questions that matter this week, we're considering, can forgiveness combat hate? The news is full of the events in Charleston where a young white man is suspected of killing nine black people in a church during a Bible meeting. And this led me to consider the actions of some of the relatives of those killed who have already expressed forgiveness for the killer. I've been out and about getting opinions aimed at starting us thinking. First, let's hear what Mara and Chris had to say.
Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Maura.
Chris.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, can forgiveness combat hate? Newspapers around the world have the events in Charleston as their headline. Spain's El País comments that the atrocity has stirred up America's worst ghosts. On the one side, we have this senseless, racially motivated act of killing. And on the other side, we have extraordinary acts of love and forgiveness on the part of some of the victims' family members. These people seemingly are trying to hold together their sense of meaning about themselves and their community through love. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this and whether you think forgiveness can combat hate.
I think that, my first reaction to the tragedy was feeling kind of depressed and the wind taken out of my sails just because of this happening over and over again. And I did read that some of the families of the victims had chosen to forgive this person. I think forgiveness is for the individual to make their journey easier and lighter, but I think that truly forgiving this person would have to mean that he would actually have to step forth and ask for forgiveness for what he has done. If he just shows no remorse, if he is cold and heartless, then that's not a forgivable act. I'm not going to forgive the act. I might be able to forgive the ignorance, the hatred, the extreme prejudice that he's buried under, but it still makes me furious at the same time. Yes. So clearly I haven't forgiven.
Right. I mean, I guess part of the rationale from what I've read is that they feel it's for God to forgive him or judge him or whatever. I mean, is that something you would take into account in this?
Well, I mean, I think that people with a strong Christian faith, that's a belief that serves in a really beautiful, strong way. If someone is so surrendered to the idea of, or the belief and the faith in God, that they can trust that, you know, redemption will come at the hands of God, or, you know, condemnation will come either way, then it's not in their hands. The things beyond their control, like the Serenity Prayer, is very helpful in times like this.
Right.
And that's certainly one way. That's a strategy. It's a coping strategy, I think.
Yeah. What about you? What are your thoughts? Do you think forgiveness can be useful in these situations where there's obviously been intense hate in why he committed this act? Well, we're assuming. I mean, there certainly was intent to hurt people for very specific reasons.
I think forgiveness is a choice, and on an individual basis, it can lift people up and have a way to deal with the grief and sorrow of the situation. But I think collectively, as community or society, that to simply forgive someone shouldn't be used as a way to not look at the deeper causes and meaning and sort of the roots of why these actions are happening.
Right.
So that it shouldn't be just something that takes away from the really uncomfortable and painful discussion that should be happening in communities about why people see it fit to kill other people because of their race or claim that, or I mean gun control, all of these other political discussions that can be really polarized, that choosing to forgive someone is a very beautiful, can be a very beautiful act, and it doesn't take away from, like you were saying, the hatred. So it doesn't wipe away. Forgiveness doesn't mean that there, it's, I don't see it as wiping away or battling the hatred. The hatred still is there, and you can choose to forgive. They equally exist. And there needs to be discussion about why the actions have happened.
Right. You brought up an interesting point about that it can actually help the person who is doing the forgiving to heal. Does that seem an important reason to you to perhaps try and take this approach to awful things that may happen to us?
Well, there's so much happening now. You know, if you were to be aware of everything that was happening right now and take it in too much like a sponge, it would just sink you. So I think that standing in the side of hope and trust and the light, if you will, as opposed to the darkness, is something that's really important to do at this time and very difficult to do, because what happens with these events is that the media sensationalizes it, polarizes it, makes it a black versus white issue, really attempts to be divisive, and then all the gun control advocates chime in. And there's a whole other level of, would the government be happy with less guns on the street? Would it be easier for them to install a police state and control the masses? So, you know, there's a whole school of thought around that as well that, you know, I'm not going to get into too much at the moment. But, yeah, I think that if we can find a way to, I don't know if forgiveness is the right word, but to make peace somehow with what is happening in the world and try to stand in the place of goodness and be the change that you want to see, you know, one person at a time. Because it's easy to get reactive. It's easy to want to pour gas on the fire, especially with activists, you know, which I am an activist myself and had to learn the hard way how to not pour gas on the fire.
Right.
But that's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a real challenge.
Yeah. And you brought up the fact that forgiving, you know, shouldn't take away from the important discussions needed about why such an act like this could happen in the context of our country. And apparently he might be charged with domestic terrorism because he did have an intention to try and create wider sort of dissent in the community by committing a racist act. I'm wondering whether you think that in itself seems like a reason to respond with love rather than hate, because if it creates more division, then it's actually doing what he intended. So does that seem like a reason to respond with forgiveness?
I think it seems to be a reason to respond in a less reactive way.
Right, yes.
So if that's right. By forgiveness or creating community dialogue and really trying to both grieve and feel the pain of his those actions, and at the same time understand their deeper cause and not just be reactive.
Right. Some people see forgiveness, especially in a situation like this, as a sign of weakness. Do you see forgiveness as strength or weakness?
Well, I would just add that, you know, the word terrorism is a post 9/11 word that's used to sell newspapers and have people tune in to the evening news. And so forgiveness, when it comes to a terrorist act, also has to do with understanding the power plays that are going on and how to not be asleep to what the corporate government media complex is trying to do to the masses, which is make them reactive, make them afraid, and put them in a place of polarities. And so I think that understanding that helps to cut through a lot of what we're seeing in the press. The act itself, in terms of forgiveness, you know, just you have to keep coming back to whatever you can do as an individual to stay sane in the world that's pretty much gone insane at this point in time in history.
Right, yes. What about your thoughts on that?
I definitely think that choosing forgiveness is a huge strength. To choose to forgive someone for causing you great pain is to really sit with your grief and let it run through and not just hold a grudge or resentment or hatred for someone else. So I see it as a strength.
And I think also you mentioned this in passing, that forgiving someone for doing something doesn't mean that you are saying that the act that was committed was okay or inconsequential. It's a different thing, isn't it? It's like not adding a crime to a crime in a way. Would you agree?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. It's like the eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinions.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, that was Maura and Chris talking there. I'm just wondering, that part of Out and About, the feature is designed to get us thinking. I'm wondering where your mind is going with this now. If I'd asked you these questions, what would you have responded? I'm just wondering, what, you know, it's hard to be stopped on the street, you know, and just be asked these questions without knowing what somebody's going to ask you in advance. So, you know, it's interesting to turn that over in your mind. And if you have any comments, you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back after these messages.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
This portion of the show is sponsored by Dina Scopatoni, who is an award-winning fashion model, academic teaching modern art history at Cabrillo College, and Vogue fashion photographer. An ocular centrist, Dina's photographs range from fashion editorials to soul-catching portraits to evocative documentary images. The vibrant nature of her work evokes the glamour of Mario Testino, Annie Leibovitz, and Helmut Newton, while expressing an understanding of composition and contrast which is all her own. Trained as an art historian at the University of London's esteemed Courtauld Institute, Dina Scopatoni looks for the intellectual and visual contrasts in each of her photographs. If you're interested in viewing her wonderful work, you can go to dinascopatoni.com. That's dinascopatoni.com.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations on this week's topic, Can Forgiveness Combat Hate? Well, the next people that I spoke to on the street were Jeremy and Aaron. So let's hear what they have to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Jeremy.
Aaron. Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, can forgiveness combat hate? The recent events in Charleston, we've seen horrific, senseless acts of violence. On the other side, we've seen extraordinary acts of love and forgiveness on the part of some of the victims' family members. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this and whether you think forgiveness can combat hate.
I wonder that all the time, actually. I know we've been married for over 5 years now, which isn't a long time, but it's long enough to know that in our relationship, it definitely works. And so I think that on a broader scale, it would definitely work. And I'm a little optimistic in that sense, but I also tend to get really frustrated with people. And so, yeah, I don't know. I hope that there's some possibility there.
So the act of forgiveness is an act that has ramifications, but it also is primarily, I would say, a healing act for the person doing the forgiveness. Is that what you've experienced in your relationship, that it's helped you to process or heal certain feelings that have then been transmuted into something more positive? Is that what you're indicating?
Yeah, I think it's it's definitely a big step for the person who is taking that first step as the, you know, the one offering forgiveness. And I mean, I think, yeah, if it's not received in the, I don't know, in the ideal way, and then maybe there's still something positive to take away from it, and there's still some transformation starting with that first person.
Right.
I would say, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And what about you in the context of Charleston and if your relationship, if you want to comment on that, you know, do you think that forgiveness can combat hate?
Yeah, that question makes me think of, I'm a social worker and I work with children, youth, and families, and a lot of the people that I work with have experienced really terrible traumas at the hand of other people. And it's something that for kids especially is really hard to move past, and it really creates a lot of strife in their life. And I, as a social worker, we can't really tell people to practice forgiveness. We're kind of there to partner with a person, but I do see in my clients' lives that those who try to you know, mend bridges, or not even that, those who just try to move forward and recognize a person for what they are and forgive them, and just kind of, it allows them to free themselves of grudge. The people that I know in my professional life and personal life who kind of hang on to something. I think there's some quote about, like, it's like drinking poison expecting the other person to die, or, you know, it's like you're holding on to something and it's actually just punishing you. And so I do think that forgiveness can combat hate, if for no other reason than you're less likely to commit atrocities against somebody else when you've forgiven someone. Because I don't think it can necessarily change another person. I mean, I do think experiencing forgiveness is extremely powerful, and some people are able to have insight around that, but even if you know the person will never know they're forgiven, I think it still, you know, is a blessing to yourself to practice forgiveness.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably important to recognize that the act of forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean you're condoning what happened. You're just choosing to release having negative feelings about it in an ongoing way yourself.
Right, exactly. I think that so many people have experienced such awful, devastating traumas, and it is clear that that is not the way to live. You never would want to do that to somebody else after you've experienced something so terrible, and yet holding on to it, it almost enhances the trauma. If you've lost a loved one and you just ruminate on it all the time, from what I've observed, it just you're reliving it. It's very freeing to forgive.
Right. Looking at Charleston, a lot of people are saying that he wanted to divide us, but we're closer than ever before. It seems people are united in feeling shock and horror and revulsion at what happened, but also a lot of empathy and compassion. And I'm wondering, do you think that the way in which some of the victims' families have responded with this approach of love and forgiveness has helped the community to receive the incident differently and drawn them together?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I just think it's a good situation, or a good example of leading by example. And I just think that, I don't know, somebody has to take the first step. And for the people, like, most directly affected to take that first step, like, that's huge.
Yeah.
And I mean, how, like, it's got to be way harder for them than it would be for me to let go of that hate of this person or whatever.
So it's kind of inspirational in a way. You think if that person can forgive this awful, senseless act, really, then...
Yeah, totally. I don't know if you're diving into the whole, like, other side of the conversation where... I don't know, the media and the communities are responding toward this person in this specific way, and if this person was of a different ethnicity, namely, I think the example that's been repeated is, you know, Middle Eastern, then they would be labeled something different, and they'd, like the communities and the government would be reacting a lot differently. I think in that situation, I wonder how much good the victims' families taking that first step would actually, I don't know, make. So, but that's, I don't, that's not really something that I really dive into very much.
So you're saying in that instance, the prejudice perhaps towards the person committing the crime may be so great that even their family, the victim's families forgiving them couldn't overcome that prejudice. It's what you're speculating. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I guess I just wonder that. I don't know. Yeah. And I don't assume to know or, you know, it's just, that just makes it so much more complicated when you bring that into it. And
I think though, what I see is that the way they're responding is kind of disruptive in the sense of we use now with, like, you know, technology and things like that. It's bringing a completely, a different way of responding to a situation than you would think the people would respond. So it's kind of jolting people out of their normal responses. And so I wonder, even in the example that you gave, even if it was, you know, a Muslim terrorist, whether if the victim's families, I mean, that might even be a bigger thing if they could say, well, yes, we know he's, that's, you know, true, Islamic State or whatever, but we still forgive him. Again, it's kind of disrupting what we're being fed a lot of the time, and the responses that, you know, and to feel this constant threat.
I guess what I'm wondering is if you know, if that were the case, like, would their reaction of forgiveness create not have as much of an effect, and you're hypothesizing that maybe it would have even a greater effect, which is really interesting thing to think about. And I would love that, if that were true.
I do think you're right about it kind of shocks people to see someone, like, responding with, like, gentleness and forgiveness. And I think that's, like, even though we've seen instances of this, like, through history, like Martin Luther King, Gandhi, even, like, you know, Jesus, like, people who have responded with, like, love and, like, passiveness and forgiveness and kind of, you know, turning the other cheek, so to speak, it still shocks us. I just think we are in a culture of, like, divisiveness and intensity and people finding reasons to hate each other. And so I do think it's amazing when someone can step out in forgiveness, and I think it always catches us off guard.
Some people think of forgiveness as an act of weakness rather than strength. How would you perceive it?
I think forgiveness is so, so hard to truly let something go. I mean, I think it's easier, I can speak personally, to ruminate on something and to just, like, think about it every day.
It almost feels better, at least, like, in the moment.
Yeah, you feel kind of vindicated, or you feel kind of, like, powerful to hate someone, or to feel really angry, or to feel justified. And to forgive, to let all that go, and to acknowledge, like, they're a person,
it's,
I'm,
like,
a person.
It's the hardest thing ever.
It's so hard.
Yeah. And I mean, I just can speak just within our relationship, and I mean, just within the small microcosm that is our relationship, like, you know, we've been through, like, some really difficult stuff, and, like, that in and of itself, like, taking the first step and being the first one to forgive and leading by example, and I mean, that's just the terminology I keep going back to, but it's so hard, and it's, it's very human to, I don't know. It's very human to hold on to it and want to control it and want to, just feel more powerful. So I would say that it's the opposite, that it's, it shows strength rather than weakness.
Well, it's inspiring to hear how you're using it in your personal life. And I think, you know, if we could all do that on our personal levels, then we wouldn't see hate being reflected in the world in these sort of wider ways that we are seeing all over the world. So it's
inspiring to hear about your approach.
Great. I'm glad.
You're so inspiring.
Our marriage is inspiring.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Ruth.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my on-the-street conversations on our topic this week, can forgiveness combat hate? And I'm just wondering what you're thinking about this right now. Just imagine if I was asking you these questions, if I'd stopped you on the street, what would you be responding, I wonder? If you have any comments on this, you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, next I spoke to Eric, Ken and Fred. So let's hear what they have to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Eric,
Ken
and Fred.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, can forgiveness combat hate? Obviously, the events in Charleston are really in the news. The intention apparently of the killer was to try and divide people. But there's been a kind of extraordinary response from some of the victims' family members of love and forgiveness. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this and whether you think forgiveness can combat hate.
Okay, first the reason why we forgive anyone who's ever done anything wrong to us ever is for ourselves, not for the person that, because by forgiving someone, we free ourselves. We forgive him immediately because that frees ourselves. And we remove him from society. He can no longer be within, function and move about within society because he may harm another human being.
I'm also specifically thinking about, can forgiveness combat hate? And I think from what you're saying, that if you're saying it's a personal thing.
But even using a word like combat, I mean, there is only harmony. By forgiveness, we start to plant the seeds of harmony. So we don't combat hate. We heal hate.
Right, that's a good point.
So I don't like the word combat.
Yes, no, that's a good comment. What are your thoughts?
I think it's the only option is forgiving hate. And we've had enough of hate on the planet. And we have to evolve. We have to evolve. There's not a choice. And the only way to evolve is to forgive. And it's, like he said, it's for ourselves to begin with. But then for the rest of the world, immediately after that.
Yeah. Because I suppose the example of somebody being able to forgive in an extreme situation of pain is inspiring, perhaps, to others. It's certainly, so far it seems like that in the community, it's inspiring people to come together and not respond, you know, in a violent way to what is essentially a racist crime. And obviously there's been a lot in the media about that. So I think what you're saying is true.
First of all, we got to turn the televisions off. Throw them out the window, smash, because all this violence, all we're doing is planting the seeds for more violence. People hear about incidents like this just happening, and they go, what's wrong? What's wrong with this person? Hey, it's deep within our American society. We're a violent society. We have this boxing. We have this, what's this new
ultimate
violence?
Fighting.
Ultimate fighting. We have football. I mean, and then we have this violence on TV. First of all, it should be a felony for anyone to show anything of violence. We got to let go of all that. We have to start being kind to every person on the planet. That's the beginning. And if that's part of forgiveness, fine.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I got to see on Democracy Now this morning a picture of each of those people that got killed. And there's some really beautiful people there. A young, old, very old lady, what was she, 84, young man, and beautiful people, and along with what happened to Martin Luther King. So in some ways, they're all being crucified on. And the essence of, if you believe that there's some sort of a redemption, that they all died, hopefully some good will come of this. That's the thing of making lemonade out of lemons, lemons into lemonade. Well, this is sort of the ultimate, well, not the ultimate, but it's a good, really good example of trying to turn lemons, a very bitter, terrible, grotesque thing into something beautiful, something better, like Eric's saying. Maybe there's something good will come of this.
Some people see forgiveness as an act of weakness, you know. I mean, that is more the American way to sort of meet aggression and an act of threat with aggression and threat. So I guess I'm part of the reason I'm doing this topic is to wonder whether meeting these kind of things with forgiveness instead can be effective. And are you saying you think it can?
Oh, it has been. Look at what happened in Vietnam. I mean, the only reason we didn't have some sort of civil war during the Vietnam time, when they killed all those people in Vietnam and then all those millions of people in Cambodia. I mean, that's terrible. And it goes on and on and on. The killing goes on and on. And that's not getting us anywhere. The only answer, as in Vietnam, and was to do something different. And that's what I think we're doing here, trying to do something different.
Right. Do you have any more thoughts?
Well, yes. I mean, first of all, the person who would commit an act like this has been starved of love and harmony. He's listening to the wrong kinds of music, first of all. No, I'm serious. There's a lot of music that, like, there's some music that inspires violence, and there's some music that's harmonious, and it's a spiritual music, and it lifts us up. This person's listening to the wrong kind of music. He's watching television, probably. He's watching all this violence. He needs to go out into nature, and he needs to probably take a psychedelic and read spiritual books and become, get some kind of oneness with himself and the planet and find his inner peace. Until every person on this planet has a full belly and finds inner spiritual peace, there's going to be more and more and more and more and more and more of these kinds of incidents.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly easy in these situations to make it very black and white and to demonize somebody and just think, oh, this person is evil and they've done this. But I would offer up that life is much more complex than that. And who knows what influences this person actually had, but you're suggesting some of the possible influences.
It's the American way. All this violence. They're watching football and the ultimate, what did you call it?
Ultimate fighting.
Ultimate fighting. Yeah. All this. Forget all that stuff. We should all be hugging each other, reading books, not watching television, and being kind to every other person on the planet, and forget all these differences of skin color and whatever. You know, I mean, we're all one. We are all one. This fellow has been neglected and had the wrong inputs. He needs to come out here and meditate on the beach and look at the ocean and find the peace under a beautiful 3,000-year-old redwood, which is a cathedral. He's not in touch with nature. This is a sick man, and he reflects the American society and the media.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
Just that the family's response was so profound. I think that it's really an amazing example for us as a nation, and that we need. I mean, how incredibly courageous and just compassionate and profound for them to do that, and I really honor them, and my heart goes out to them, and they're stepping up, and that's what we need in this world, and definitely in this nation.
Amen.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to It's Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, my On the Street conversations this week. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more from Out and About after these messages.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations on our question that matters this week. Let's hear from Nick and Nancy what they had to say on this.
Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Nancy.
Nick.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at Can Forgiveness Combat Hate? There's been these very recent events in Charleston with these seemingly senseless, racially motivated killings. And yet on the other side, we've had these extraordinary acts of love and forgiveness on the part of some of the victims' family members. It seems these people are trying to hold together their sense of meaning about themselves and their community through love and trying to follow what the people who were killed would have wanted them to do. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this and whether you think forgiveness can combat hate, whether it is actually having a positive effect in the community, perhaps in Charleston, but also for the people who are forgiving.
I think for one, you have to understand that I guess the forgiveness can be there, but the justice has to be there as well. I don't think that they're related necessarily, but I think just for the betterment of society, you need to see the justice there. You need to see forgiveness once justice has been served. So I think that once whatever the law of the land has been laid down on the case, then you need to accept that as how it's going to be and personally forgive and then let justice take over from there. And then just hopefully have faith in the justice system, as screwed and warped as it is, to deal out what they think is best for the situation. But as you as a person, it's not worth it to lose days and years off your life harboring an anger that can normally just be forgiven away. Mm. It takes forever, and it's much easier said than done, but at what point is it worth your health and your sanity and your stress and cortisol levels and all that just to forgive?
It seems, from what we know so far, that his intention was to try and create racial dissent, to try and stir up violence based on racial lines. I mean, do you think that the way some of these people are responding is mitigating that, and so he's not succeeding?
Specifically, which responses?
Forgiving him. I mean, basically, the children of one of the women who was killed have said that they forgive him, and they're coming from a place of love. I mean, I don't think that means they're condoning what he did, but in terms of they're not sort of saying, we hate him and, you know, whites are trying to hold us down. You know, they're not contributing or adding to this, you know, foment of racial tension. They're doing the opposite. They're kind of dissipating that by these acts of forgiveness.
Yeah, I think if anything is going to give a negative press, the only way you can really extinguish that negative fire is to put a positive blanket on it. And I think that as long as the community is forgiving any sort of negative moment in its history, then I think that it can be quickly forgiven and forgotten. As long as there's a positive spin taking over, the media and everyone likes to put the negative and the hate and the whatever on it. But as long as enough people can blanket it with a positive experience, I think it'll quickly fade away from the negative and start encompassing the positive.
Mm. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think hate can be healed, perhaps, in these situations by coming from a position of love? or perhaps even in our personal lives. I don't know if you've either of you had experiences of where somebody has done something egregious to you and then you've come to a place where you've let that go.
I think that forgiveness is something that you need to do for yourself. It's not healthy to hold on to hate, and to forgive the person who wronged you is something that will help you heal personally.
In this situation, do you think it's also helping the community heal in a way? It's having a wider effect?
I think so. I think that building animosity towards, you know, that person, or even towards a group of people that that person belonged to, isn't going to help the community at all. It's better to not give the shooter what he wanted, which is to build animosity.
Right, yes. Something that you said made me think about how in certain countries, I think probably mostly in the Middle East, but maybe in Asia as well, there is the victims are involved in what the punishment is for the perpetrator of the crime. Obviously, we don't do that here, but just something that you said made me wonder whether that was something you would think would be appropriate.
I think that depends on the culture. For us, we're raised differently, and maybe we don't have a cathartic experience to directly involve ourselves in the consequences of the other person, whether it be like personally laying down a judgment or having a hand in the judgment. We're a little more of a step back and let the police, law, / judge, whatever, to deal with their business. And we just kind of step back and wait for the news report. I think if we were growing up differently and culturally similar to those other societies, we may feel differently. I think for us, it's a little, it'd be a little too close for me personally. Right. But that's just how I grew up. Different cultures have different backgrounds, and those backgrounds are going to make for different results.
You were also saying that justice is very important. There's a saying, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. I guess this is perhaps an example of that, where people are trying to show compassion in one sense, but whilst at the same time not condoning what's been done.
Yeah, I think this needs to be a good balance of overarching justice and then a personal sense of morality. I don't think it's the government's job to instill a morality and kind of fear of acting right that way. I think their job is to just hand out the justice where it needs to be served and let the people kind of deal with it personally after that.
I'm just wondering, what do you think you would do if you found yourself in this circumstance? I mean, it seems like a remarkable act of these people. Could you conceive that you might respond in this way?
I think if I were a bigger person, maybe. That's really hard to say. It's hard to put yourself in that situation.
Yeah.
But I definitely would like to think that I'd respond that way.
Yeah.
But I would definitely find it very difficult.
Yeah. And I think what you said is also true, that it is, in many ways, it's a healing act for the individual, isn't it, to not carry forward those feelings, because then it's almost like there's two crimes, you know, the crime of ruining your life as well for constantly feeling full of hate.
Right. It'll take time, but I think it's the healthier route to take.
Yeah. And what about you? Do you see it as a viable response?
Viable response, yeah. Personally, I don't see myself having the same characteristic of forgiveness. I think those people are amazing for what they've done. I think it would take me a long time to maybe I can go up in front of a podium and say I forgive, but really truly deep in my heart, do I forgive? I would say no. It would take a very long time of healing to really forgive something like that.
Yeah.
But I can go up in front of a podium all day and say whatever I need to.
Are you implying that that might be what they're doing?
Not at all.
Okay.
Just me,
just
me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess also there's a difference between carrying hatred towards somebody and carrying a lot of pain. I imagine just because you forgive someone doesn't mean you're not in incredible pain, you know, so there's a distinction there probably as well.
Yeah, there's probably a crowbar separation there, but I think it would be tempting as a knee-jerk reaction to pair the pain and the hatred, right? Because something wronged you, well, what wronged you? Then you need to have something to blame for wronging you.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my on-the-street conversations and our topic this week, can forgiveness combat hate. And as I was mentioning earlier, if you were listening then, this feature is designed to get us thinking. So, you know, again, I'm wondering where your mind is going with this right now. If I had stopped you on the street and asked you these questions, what would you have responded? And if you do have any comments, you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear your opinions. And if you go to the website, you can also find all my previous podcasts. I've had some very interesting topics and also some really interesting arts guests. So you can check that out there. It's a question of balance.com. Well, finally this week I talked to Roger and Mac. So let's hear what they had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
I'm Roger.
I'm Mac.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week I'm thinking about, can forgiveness combat hate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about kind of mentality. You know, the hate is really just driven by, it's just, you know, it's kind of a self-perpetuating thing where the more you think about how much you hate somebody, the worse it gets. And if you can kind of change that mentality and, you know, try to look at a different perspective and really work on trying to figure out how to, like, yeah, change your mentality, try to forgive people, everything just kind of gets better. And there's no reason to hold on to hate because it's just, it makes everything worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're condoning what's been done, but it's a position of not creating more bad things out of what's happened for yourself and maybe in the wider community.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think, you can look at like what happened in South Africa. That whole thing was the whole, you know, Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Desmond Tutu's thing. South Africa's got its problems, but really, I mean, what they managed to do is pretty miraculous. And it was all kind of driven by what you're talking about is the, you know, working on forgiveness and then moving past it, as opposed to this kind of like, you know, vindictive, you know, justice mentality, which kind of just makes things worse.
Yeah. What about you? Have you had sort of any personal experiences around this?
I'm a little bit of a laid-back guy, but I feel like I try not to read in between the lines too much when somebody's like, oh, what the hell, man? Like, why are you doing this if I did something wrong? Or because I've never been like, dude, what the hell kind of vibe. But I feel like if I say sorry and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't realize that meant that much to you. I'm sorry, I really am. That makes things a little bit better for between the relationship between me and that guy or girl.
I mean, I think obviously it's quite a challenge to take the high ground, but in this situation in Charleston, the intent of this man, this white man killing these 9 black people in this church, was to try and create wider hatred. And so a response of forgiveness in this instance has kind of taken the wind out of that, although obviously it seems phenomenally difficult. So, I mean, do you see in this kind of situation, obviously what you're saying about South Africa, it is a way to move forward instead of staying where you are?
Right. I mean, it's not, it's difficult. It's obviously difficult because if you feel that you've been wronged, you know, you have to, you want to feel like some kind of justice is coming. But a lot of times that kind of vindictive attitude just doesn't help the situation. And if you forgive, more often than not, they're not going to, like, you know, take advantage of you or, like, you know, realize that you're being lenient and, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's not about that. And if you can, it's kind of almost a primal thing where you want justice. But if you can move beyond that, it's going to help the situation, really.
You mentioned that about, you know, they're not going to think you're being lenient. That is some people's thought, that it sort of puts you in a position of weakness. Other people I've interviewed have actually said they think it takes an incredible amount of strength to forgive. What would be your thought on that?
So, I mean, what I'm thinking about right now is I'm thinking about, like, the death penalty and, you know, the thing with, like, the Boston bomber. You know, a lot of people were want this person to be killed. I personally don't believe in the death penalty, but, you know, and there's a lot of articles where, like, the families and stuff don't want the person to be killed, not because of forgiveness, just because they want this person out of their lives, and they don't want all of these, like, trials and stuff, you know. They want this person to just rot in jail, and, I mean, that's not necessarily forgiveness, but it's just, I don't know.
I mean, I've read an article already about this situation saying that this man shouldn't even be allowed to live another 2 weeks because he's taken the lives of these people. But I guess what I'm asking you with this question is that response, kind of response, really helpful? Is that going to help us in the future, you know, if it's sort of the eye for an eye thing? That's one of my other interviewees said it makes the whole world blind, quoting Gandhi. You know, is that something you adhere to?
I mean, I think what you said about trying to take the high ground is the right attitude, because, like I said, it's like a primal thing. It's not necessarily practical or anything. It's it's very much just about kind of feeding this inner, you know, desire to have something rectified, and it doesn't even, you know, it might not be practical. I mean, maybe maybe it's more practical for this, but it's this is a weird thing between practicality and morality, and you can't really convince someone. People have to find it on their own.
Well, thank you for your thoughts. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there's a fine line between punishment and vindictive vengeance, you know?
Yes.
I think if putting people in jail is more like a quarantine than something that's like, okay, we hate you, so we're putting you here, and we feel like you should have the death penalty and, you know, die because of so-and-so, because we don't like you, and because of all these terrible things, but more of a chance to, like, here's your punishment. We're trying to smack some reason to you rather than, like, force our ideals, just trying to make you think a little bit more than forcing, like, okay, hating blacks or is wrong because it is wrong. You know, I'm trying to say something complex, but it's not really coming out right.
Well, it sounds like you're supporting a more rehabilitative approach.
Yeah.
Or even, like, more of a restorative justice approach.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, some good can come out of a little bit of harsh, of a harsh push, but it's really hard not to overdo it. Like, where's the line between giving somebody the death penalty or giving them 20 years or letting them off with a slight, you know, tap on the wrist, like some things have happened, like, where other people have thought, oh, this guy should not have gotten off with just 5 years in jail. Well, he should not have gotten the death penalty because I don't think that was that bad. A lot of things have their circumstances, and it's really hard just to judge something without being their first person, I feel.
Right, yeah.
You know, knowing every angle from his point of view. Yeah. And from, I think that's the biggest part, is trying to see something from somebody else, like, the wrongdoer's view. That's the hardest part.
Like, I think it's very easy to see it in black and white and just think, well, he's completely evil without knowing anything about his background. I mean, that doesn't make what he did any less horrific, but I guess there's a level of compassion there in trying to understand how somebody may have got to this point, like, of doing such a terrible thing.
That's not all there is to the equation, you know? You can't just look at this as X plus 9 equals 27.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your thoughts.
No problem.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and thank you to all the people who took part in my On the Street conversations this week. I hope it's given you something to think about. And coming up in the second hour, I'm very pleased to be interviewing Santa Cruz resident Karen Joy Fowler, internationally best-selling and award-winning author of 6 novels and 3 short story collections. Consistently loved by critics and readers alike, her work traverses science fiction, fantasy, and literary fiction. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Karen. That's coming up in the second hour. See you after the break.